Okay, it's Books of the Year. Matteo Acaripor's book is Black Buck. You can hear our conversation where you got this podcast, but this is the Q&A. At the end of the podcast, Matteo, you just mentioned Stephen King's On Writing. And if anyone ever asked me for advice, I would say listen to Stephen King, read that book, because it is astonishing. And there was just one other line from that book which occurred to me when I was reading your book, and that is when he talks about honest dialogue. And people who write to him and say, I didn't like the language that this character used. I didn't, you know, whether it be coarse language or blasphemy or whatever. And he always says, I am using honest dialogue. I am using the words that I think these people would have used. And I think that's also something that comes through Black Buck. Anyway, this isn't part of the Q&A. It's just an opening observation. So question number one, what is the last book you really, really enjoyed?
It is a book called The Ones Who Don't Say They Love You by Maurice Carlos Ruffin. It comes out, I believe, in August, at least here in the States. Not sure about the UK, but it's a book of short stories. It's a very short book. Every story is different, but they all contain the same visceral humanity. And I just experienced such a range of emotions while reading it. And I think that anyone who picks it up will experience the same.
Okay, just give us the title again. I know people can pause the podcast. Just give us the title again.
The Ones Who Don't Say They Love You by Maurice Carlos Ruffin. He had also written a book called We Cast a Shadow.
Okay.
Is there a book, Matteo, that stands out to you from your childhood?
I don't remember the specifics, but one of my aunts had given me a series of books with the name of Left Behind, or there was a Left Behind series about what happens, you know, after basically the rapture in the world and all of that. And it scared the hell out of me. So yeah, that stands out to me. It just made me very, very, very afraid.
Was that read to you as a child, Matteo? I mean, did you have that read out loud?
No. Definitely not. My parents wouldn't be reading something like that to me. This was my aunt just gave me the book or the series. And I remember that I was in my room, locked in my room for some reason. I was upset at my family or my parents. I have four brothers. So think about that. That's like a whole basketball team in a house. And I started opening up the book. And the further I got into it, the more shook I became. So that's a book that jumps out to me from my childhood.
Okay. Describe your book collection for us. Actually, I can see some of it, but I imagine that's the bit that's curated so that we can, are the books you want us to see. But if we were to wander around your apartment, wander around your house, apart from complaining that the air conditioning was off and it's noisy because of the trains, how would we see your books arranged?
Oh, man. I mean, this is how you would see them arranged. They're arranged in a way where I have the books that I love most on the top shelves. And then there's a shelf dedicated to the books that I haven't read. And then there's a shelf of business books that I bought when I was working at a startup that I probably will never read. So I should give them away. But 80-85% of the books that you see on these shelves behind me, I've read. And I'm not going to say that I love them all, but I've read them. It is an eclectic group of books. There are books stretching from the 1800s. There are books from the 50s and 60s and 70s. That's where some of my favorite literature, that's when it was published. And then there are newer books, just so that I have a mix of contemporary and historical and older, so that I could know what's going on today. The books range from Queenie, right, which was very popular over there in the UK. Shout out to Candace Carter Williams, to Anxious People by Frederick Bachman, which I read, to King Leopold's Ghost. There's a range, yeah.
Okay, and if we were looking at your collection, there is there one author that is standing out more than any of the others? Do you have a favorite writer? In other words,
I'm not going to say I have a favorite writer, but there are writers who I very much so revere. A man named John A. Williams, who has published many books. He's no longer here, but the first book that I ever read of his was The Man Who Cried I Am. And they're the Angry Ones. There are just so many other books. Then there's Iceberg Slim, who wrote a very controversial book called Pimp. And I've read other books of his, like Mama Black Widow and Trick Baby. And I just really love his use of voice. Of course, Toni Morrison, Philip Roth. There are just so many. There are so many out there. But yeah, I can't say that I have a favorite. Colson Whitehead, of course. Come on. Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. We could be here all day.
Yeah, if Colson is listening to this, he will have got to this point. Come on, guys. I gave you the most incredible quote. You better mention
me. Where's my mention?
Exactly. Now, the next question, I'm going to give you the question exactly as we wrote it down. It kind of touches on an area that we spoke about on the other interview on the main podcast. So people, if they've heard that, will have a flavor of this answer already. But the question as it stands is this. Where and when are you most comfortable writing? What time of day, whereabouts, with music or without, and how do you not get distracted? So take it away. Answer that however you wish.
So I will only write in my apartment in a corner facing a blank wall and in this little black desk that I'd found years ago in a large apartment building that I was living in an uncomfortable chair. And yeah, so that's where I write. The time of day, I mean, if people listen to the last podcast, they're probably wondering if I'm writing at like 9 p.m. at night, right? No, I'm writing or 1 a.m., right? I'm probably beginning to actually write around 12:30, 1 p.m. Eastern. That's the time. And I will write for anywhere between 1 to 2.5 hours, maybe 3. Back in the day with Black Buck, it could have been 4 because I had less time. And in terms of the last bit, how do I not get distracted? I turn my phone off. And if people have listened to my last routine, like I'm not, it's playful and fun in some ways, but I'm not playing around, right? When it's time to write, I'm there. After the energy that I expended in getting myself into this place, I better not get distracted, you know?
I'm struck there, Matteo, that you're writing in front of this blank wall, because I think that also, I'm pretty sure Stephen King in On Writing says that he recommends writing in front of a blank wall. Don't have anything in front of you that is likely to draw your attention away. Next question then, is there a book that you really had to sort of persevere with, but you're glad you did? I've lost count of the number of books that I've sort of put down after sometimes only, you know, 10 or 15 pages. But is there one that you found yourself struggling with to begin with, but then you're really glad you stuck with it?
Not many come to mind. I'm not someone that puts books down. So if I'm in it, I'm going to finish. And even if I don't like it, I'm going to try to analyze and ask myself why I didn't like it. So that I could just better understand myself as a reader, which I hope will inform, you know, myself as a writer. But one book that I absolutely loved but was very, very difficult to get through was King Leopold's Ghost by Adam Hochschild. And this is a book, it's nonfiction, hundreds of pages detailing King Leopold II and the Belgians' conquest of the Congo. And it is just so illuminating of where we are today, globally, but very, very hard to get through.
Yes. The Belgian story of empire is one of the worst, isn't it?
One of the worst, yeah.
Is there a book, Matteo, that you would like to step inside of? I always think this is an odd question, but anyway, where the world creation is so, maybe you only stay there for a day or maybe 5 minutes or something, where you've read it and you thought, I wouldn't mind being a part of that.
Yeah, probably Night Song by John A. Williams or one of the novels by James Baldwin. I don't know if it's another country. It might be another country. Just set in the time in New York City where jazz was prevalent, where it was very bohemian. Of course, there were a lot of cons of people just being strung out on drugs and people just being brutalized by police without body cams back then. But I love that era of being able to go to Harlem and just hear jazz in the streets and being able to step into a bar and have a good time with people like Miles Davis, you know, or Monk or just, you know, John Coltrane. That for me, I'd love to live there for a day, maybe a week, but I don't know about much longer than that.
Is there anyone that you've met through your writing career, Matteo, that you wouldn't have been able to meet otherwise? We've mentioned Colson Whitehead already on the podcast, but is there anyone that a door has been opened to you that wouldn't have been opened if it hadn't been for your excellent writing?
Most definitely, there are writers who I've respected for years who know who I am and know about Black Buck and support it, like Kiese Lehman. I've met someone who has become a big brother to me of sorts, Jason Reynolds. If you don't know who Jason Reynolds is, look him up. I mean, this guy is, he's like a literary superhero, and he primarily writes middle grade and young adult novels. There's so many other people, Nafisa Thompson Spires, whose book Heads of the Colored People just meant a lot to me. Even Candace Carty Williams, right? I loved Queenie, and she read Black Buck and gave it a quote. Then there are other people who I'm just so grateful to have met, like my agent and my editor, and then even some Hollywood folks who I've watched on TV who got Black Buck and then reached out to me saying how much they really enjoyed it. All of that means the world to me, and again, going back to this, I mentioned this in the last podcast, what means the most is just having anyone who can relate to the experience that Buck has. And they say, Matteo, you've reflected my life in these pages and I feel empowered. I feel less alone because of it. Those are the people that I'm so happy to have met.
And just before we go, Matteo, I didn't mention this in the podcast. You're at the end, your acknowledgements, they're the longest, one of the longest sections in the book. There are so many people that you want to thank, but you I think you're thanking your extended family, some of whom live in the UK. Is that right?
Yeah, I got family. So my mom is from Jamaica and my father is from Iran. So you already know there's a lot of Jamaicans there and, you know, a good amount of Iranians in certain places. I am a product of the UK. My parents met at a disco in Bristol. They met and then they moved to the States. So I have family in Birmingham, Sheffield, Manchester, wherever some of these Jamaicans live. I don't even know.
Well, it's been, I think that your parents made a mistake. I think Bristol would have been a better place in the long run.
But anyway, yeah.
However, we wouldn't have had Black
Buck. We'll never know.
Yeah. Well, we would have had a different version of Black Buck. Certainly where they wouldn't have sold vanilla sweet cream old cold brew. I don't think we'd do anything like that. No. Anyway.
Nitro Boost Tea.
Maybe. Matteo Scarripo, thank you so much for talking to us. We wish you all the best.
Thank you both.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.